prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. I'm in the studio. I'm not in Montana anymore. And we have a great show planned for you today, as usual. During the first hour, we're going to be joined by Adel Moussa himself for a special episode of Subversity Science Roundup. We're going to be talking about a peptide called BCP-157. A lot of people are interested in knowing more about it. And so we're going to try to cover as much of the research available, pertinent research. Then we're going to shift it up and talk about how accurate is your activity tracker, really? If you're like me, I love my Fitbit. I love to look at the metrics of what my life is producing. But does it really track accurately? This is an important discussion because a lot of people take this stuff seriously. Then we're going to change it up. We're going to be joined by Dr. Marielle Surreal to talk about the role of hepatic insulin resistance in obesity. Does the liver become insulin resistant before everything else? And if so, what can we learn from that? So, but without further ado, let's get started. The brilliant Adel Moussa joins me live all the way from Munster, Germany. How you doing, Adel?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
So, BPC. It's a natural for me to want to put the B after C because of ABC. BPC 157 is all the rage right now. I want to say, the guy who kind of brought it to the forefront first and did some of the more thorough investigations is a fellow that goes by the name of Dat Be True, who has a forum all about peptides. And since then, a lot of people have become more and more interested in it. What's it all about, first of all? Is it a very large peptide?
No, it's actually a pretty short one. It's only a part of a very large peptide. It's a 15 amino acid fragment of a larger peptide. And was discovered in the early 1990s by scientists from Croatia. And they had a theory that the human stress response actually has to start when we ingest something that could be potentially dangerous for us. So it has to start, obviously, in the stomach. And therefore, they isolated from the stomach several peptides and tested them for their biological effects. And what they found was a very large peptide, a gastric juice peptide they called BPC, and a part of it, which is this fragment that is now thought as a peptide to treat, for example, tendon ruptures and things like that, that has been found to be the major active part of this larger peptide they have identified in the gastric juice of mammals.
You know, a total non sequitur. But some of the stronger antibiotics that are used to treat situations like urinary tract infections, these are very, very powerful antibiotics, and they carry a risk of making soft tissue tendons and ligaments weaker, and people can actually rupture these tendon and ligaments. I wonder if these antibiotics disrupt something in the gut that affects this peptide.
It's very well possible, though the main effect is actually on the microbiome, which is not, which does not begin in the gut. And this is the hormone you would find, or a peptide you would find in the stomach already. Although you can't tell whether there's a downstream effect on the production of this peptide, which obviously has systemic effects. Although it is produced in the gut, and it's one of the first things that were investigated were actually its effects on healing the gut and preventing lesions, for example, in people who are consuming aspirin, other COX inhibitors chronically, NSAIDs.
So let's go through the list. What is the proposed benefits of BPC-157?
Well, the list is actually pretty long, but it has all got to do with the repair of tissue, and it starts with the promotion of tendon and ligament healing, where there are a couple of very convincing rodent studies available that show that if you administer this peptide at the right time, the healing process is accelerated. Then there's evidence that it also helps healing bones and repairing muscle damage. And obviously, as I mentioned before, the effects are on the stomach itself. And interestingly enough, you don't have to inject it as other peptides, but because it is an active peptide that is quote-unquote, meant to be produced in the gut, you can administer it orally.
Okay, so these peptides are sold usually in vials that are designed to be for injection purposes through research chemical companies. Is it so? Are you saying that if you're using it because you want the gut healing benefits, you should just squirt it in your mouth then?
That's not really determined yet. Unfortunately, there's only a good dozen of studies. But you see, there's not a single human study among those, unfortunately. But if you take a look at the rodent studies, both appears to work, and both appears to work systemically. So there are rodent studies where the compound was administered orally, or rather it was injected in the parietal cavity, which right. is an oral administration that makes sure that the rodent cannot spit out whatever you wanted to swallow. So it's the same as if you would ingest it orally voluntarily for a human. And that had exactly the same effect, albeit with a slightly higher doses, as injections had, and not just on the gut, but also on the healing of muscle tissue, for example. And what happens if you inject that is actually that, and this may be a bit counterintuitive, that the inflammatory process kickstarts. It really kickstarts, and it is accelerated. So at the beginning of when you hurt yourself, for example, you will see that there's a swelling and an inflammatory process, and afterwards the wound is going to heal. And something very similar is happening inside of your body whenever you hurt or whenever you damage something. And this peptide appears to have the ability to really make this process or accelerate this process in a way that will first of all help it to heal and also help it to heal completely. So if you take a look at some of the tissue analysis the scientists did, you will see that it is not only a time difference in terms of how fast a wound or how fast the tendon healed, but also there are no things like collagen tissue, which is sometimes deposited in muscle tissue if you tear it and may even impair the function.
Interesting. So some people suggest that BPC-157 increases the growth hormone receptor sites. Growth hormone always seems to have a function in these types of magical peptides. For instance, thymosin beta-4 seems to exert its greatest effect when there is adequate amounts of growth hormone available. And this one seems to affect the receptor sites, biogenesis of receptor sites. Is that true, or is that just old wives' tale?
No, that's actually proven, or has been proven in a study 2 years ago, where they were able to show that if you administer this peptide, there's going to be an increased response of, or an increased number of receptors for growth hormone. So therefore many people speculate that combining the two, I mean, growth hormone is already used in certain circles in order to promote the repair of ligaments and in order to accelerate recovery. So combining the two could actually make it even more effective. I haven't seen a study that tested the healing effects of a combination of the two, but even if you don't administer growth hormone exogenously, you still have the effect or the added benefit of having more growth hormone receptors at the site you want to have repaired. And when in the early 1990s the scientists discovered the peptide, they already speculated that this effect is not just a direct one, but it is also mediated by several hormonal aspects. And it appears as if the growth hormone was only one of several aspects. They also say that it may involve the adrenal gland, and it has also been shown that administering this peptide, when you, for example, take cortisol, will inhibit the negative effect of cortisol on muscle or on the healing of a muscle or other tissue. So it appears to be quite clear that the effects of this little peptide are very far-reaching. Although it's produced in the gut and at least in many cases administered orally, it will have an effect that really changes the way your body responds to stress and inflammation.
Do we have any, can we extrapolate any estimates of what oral or injectable doses are that have some sort of therapeutic efficacy?
It's very difficult to estimate the dosage for injections based on rodent studies. But if you take the usual calculations, it's about 400 micrograms would be the equivalent for an adult man of what is administered in rodent studies and shows exceptional effects. And if you do some internet research on the bulletin boards where people discuss stuff like this, you will find that usually this is also the suggested dose. So you would take that, and in the rodent studies, it's usually administered for a couple of days, usually 14 days or something like that, because this is actually as long as it takes for even for a torn muscle to heal if you use this compound.
Okay, so you said 400 micrograms?
400, yes.
Wow, that's not that much. That's pretty impressive.
No, it's really a very low dose. I was surprised as well. So the dosage is about 5 micrograms per kilogram of body weight if you do the calculation for orally supplied agents to rodents and then extrapolate the doses for humans. Well, as I said before, it's unfortunate we don't have human data to confirm that this is actually the dosage that works. But if you take a look at, quote-unquote, the boards, you will see that many people say it helped them, and they used it in a similar dosage.
Interesting. This is really intriguing. And the fact that, you know, one of the most exciting things about this is that you can take it orally. There are a lot of people out there who feel like they're going to the dark side if they inject something. But so that means that people can get the benefit of this orally. That's pretty exciting. Now, what about periodontal disease? It apparently has a benefit on periodontal disease, you said, right?
Yes, that's also on the list of proven benefits. It actually helps, not cure, but at least heal and ameliorate periodontal disease, which is also evidence of its general effect on everything that is related to inflammation and the degradation of tissue. And I don't know if it has been used for this purpose by many people, but at least there is a 2009 study that proves that in rodents, in a rodent model of periodontitis, it works.
Getting back to the effects of cortisol and corticosteroids, you know, we you and I were just talking about this off the air, about the excessive use of caffeine in our, well, we didn't specifically talk about this, but there's an excessive use of caffeine in our population today amongst all people, whether they be couch potatoes who consume maybe 6 to 1,000 milligrams of caffeine a day in energy drinks and coffee, to athletes who consume just as much caffeine as pre-workouts and so on, thermogenics as well. And I have to believe that over time, the body becomes resistant to the effects of cortisol and even corticosteroids. Is there, you think that this peptide could somehow reset the body to where it belongs as far as its ability to modulate and produce cortisol?
Well, it's difficult to tell because I think that it is rather a peptide that ameliorates the negative effects of corticosteroids on the usual healing process, the common healing process of damaged tissue in the human body. And I also think that it's important to point out that the caffeine addiction or abusing stimulants will not really make you produce no cortisol, but it will have you produce cortisol all the time, but at a relatively low level. And this is actually where you don't want to be. So people really see a cortisol as the devil, but you have to understand that, for example, in the morning you want the usual cortisol spike and you really want to go it up. And afterwards you want to decline, you want to have it decline over the day continuously. And this is something that this is part of the normal circadian rhythm, and you are damaging or at least you are setting this off if you are consuming caffeine all the day, all the time. And you also have to keep in mind that if you need stimulants and caffeine in order to go to work or to work out at the gym or whatever else, this is usually a sign that you are overtaxing your body, that you have too much stress. And if you are using it all the time and in order to try to cope with the stress level accumulates, and you are going beyond a certain threshold where you at some point in time still simply cannot handle it any longer, even if with the caffeine.
That happened to me. The caffeine actually stopped working. There were periods of time where after excessive use of caffeine, very, very high doses daily, I started to notice that the caffeine did not give me the mental clarity, the energy or the focus that it used to give me. And when it stopped working, that's when I realized it was time for me to stop taking it. I want to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about BPC 157. Then we're going to change it up and talk a little bit about all those activity trackers that people are wearing today, including me. You're listening to the Subversity Science Roundup with Adel Moussa. His website is Subversity, SUPPVERSITY.com. You'll be the smartest person anybody knows if you start reading the Subversity blog daily. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Proud to present Max HP, their most scientifically formulated pre-workout supplement to date, now available in two great tasting flavors, Tropic Fruit and Raspberry. Max HP is the most ultra-premium pre-workout available and is made without any artificial colors, flavors, or dye. Increasing blood flow to heighten anabolic activity, Max HP is designed to meet the heightened metabolic needs of high-performance athletes. Visit PrimeNutrition.com and use coupon code SUPERHUMANRADIO to receive 20% off of your entire order. Go to PrimeNutrition.com today.
From the makers of GLC 2000, now comes Actistatin Pro Athlete. The Actistatin formula gives you all four forms of glucosamine and chondroitin, plus Actistatin's triple patented delivery method to optimize cellular uptake and utilization of glucosamines, chondroitin, ascorbate, and manganese. Regenerate and maintain cartilage. Promote joint mobility and flexibility. Replenish lost collagen. Get 20% off your next order using the coupon code SHR. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the GLC banner ad today. Push the limits. Feel the difference with Actistatin.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Too much on your mind to fall asleep?
Oh, no.
It happens to all of us every now and then. Instead of counting sheep, count Sleep Factors, a naturopathic formulated blend that supports falling asleep naturally. No medicated numbing, no harsh interruptions of your body's natural flow. Sleep Factors work in harmony with your body and its natural rhythms, so sleep just happens naturally. Sleep Factors by Michael's Naturopathic Programs. You can find Sleep Factors and Michael's entire line of body-loving naturopathic formulations at your local health food store or online at michaelshealth.com. Practitioner formulated, practitioner approved.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
Madebyhemp.com sells the highest quality products derived from industrial hemp, raw oils high in CBD, tinctures, and salves. You can also get fashionable apparel made from industrial hemp at madebyhemp.com. CBD is a constituent of industrial hemp that has no psychoactive properties, but has been shown to provide a variety of health benefits. Go to madebyhemp.com today and take a look at all of our amazing products. Use the coupon code SHR to save 25% off your entire order. Madebyhemp.com, your one-stop shop for all things hemp on the web.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
Move over, superheroes. This is the Superhuman Channel.
See, there was Ashley. She caught my eye the very second. Welcome back to the Subversity Science Roundup here on Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Adel Moussa. We're talking about BPC-157. It's a very interesting peptide. So, obviously, it exerts an effect and leverages growth hormones. So does thymosin beta-4. Is this a good idea for people who are stacking or looking for okay, for instance, thymosin beta-4 has been shown to mitigate the damaging effects of ischemic reperfusion type incidences of both the brain and the heart when given promptly after the event has occurred. Does it sound like this would be important to stack with thymosin beta-4 if those are the types of events you're looking to mitigate?
Well, I would have to guess. There's really no evidence that it has an effect on the vascular system, but it is very unlikely that if a peptide is able to modify the inflammatory response to stress in a way as this one does, that it wouldn't have an effect in these cases too. On the other hand, you have to be careful because for example, if you take a look at the studies investigating how the peptide affects muscle repair, you will see that proteins like the protein that is responsible for the build-up of the vasculature is elevated as well. And in some instances, this is pathologically elevated and causes cardiovascular disease. So I would be careful, and I wouldn't really advise on doing that before we have at least some evidence from at least a rodent model that this is beneficial.
Anything else interesting about BPC-157 that really caught your eye?
Well, I think what is particularly interesting and typical is that there is very little research because it is a naturally occurring peptide you wouldn't be able to patent and to sell. And therefore, probably there is no human study. And if you take a look at the research that is out there, most of it, but luckily not all of the research, is coming from the same lab in Croatia, where the peptide was originally discovered. And this is quite typical for quote-unquote treatments like that, because there is no major player in the pharmaceutical industry that is interested in marketing a product like this. So you would never be able to go to your doctor and say, well, I would like to use that, and the doctor will not even know it because he only knows about the things that are advertised by the pharmaceutical companies, and it's not yet in any of the textbooks. So I think this is a major problem where this is only one of the examples where our system actually may be impairing the development of novel treatments because they are not lucrative in from a financial perspective.
BPC-157 may have benefits, it looks like, for people who have recently had muscles that have torn off the bone and reattached. It appears that its healing effects seem to cross from the soft tissue to the bone that the soft tissue is trying to heal to, correct?
Right, that's correct, absolutely. Yeah.
So that's a good thing, too.
Yeah, obviously, right. So whenever you hurt something, it appears to help. But if something is damaged by internal inflammation, there is some research on the gut. But otherwise, there is relatively little research. All there is experimental evidence where, for example, a scientist deliberately tore a muscle in a rat and then studied how it healed or things like that.
So you don't think that there's any prophylactic benefit to it for somebody to use just for daily wear and tear of the body?
Well, whenever you accelerate growth and repair process, you have to be careful because this can backfire. I would rather use it only chronically, or rather I really can't suggest to use it, but theoretically, it appears to be more useful if you are acutely injured.
So would you consider a hard workout, like a hard leg training workout that's going to produce a great deal of soreness, would that be a level of injury that would dictate the possible use of this?
Well, possible. You would probably be able to recover faster. The question always remains, will this have an effect on the adaptive processes? Because adaptation always occurs in response to a stressor that cannot be sustained. And if you ameliorate the stressor by helping your body to recover, it may not be, or it may not see, quote-unquote, the necessity to adapt. I mean, we've seen that with antioxidants, that they can blunt the adaptive effect of exercise if they block the increase of radical oxygen specimen and the following inflammatory cascade. I'm not quite sure this is going to be the case here, but again, this would have to be studied. I personally would not use them chronically in order to prevent problems with workouts. Maybe it may make sense, or it's possible that it makes sense for athletes in order to recover faster from one meet to another, but not necessarily in the off season where you want to make further gains and where you want to make further progress. Although it is possible that it helps there, it is also possible that it does the opposite.
Okay. You know what I want to do? We were going to take a break and come back and talk about activity trackers. But with your permission, I'd like to come back and talk about the blog post that you're getting ready to release about NSAIDs. This one kind of has a different end point than some of the other NSAID and muscle recovery studies that we've talked about, and it kind of fits nicely at the end of this discussion. Is that okay?
Yeah, we can do that, of course.
Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with more of Subversity Science Roundup. Stay tuned.
Nobel Prize-winning research shows telomeres are an important part of preventing cellular aging. Slowing down telomere shortenings promotes healthy cell replication and longevity. This is simple, folks. Supplement today with the longevity breakthrough of the century, Telos 95. Telos 95 provides the only scientifically validated telomere support ingredient in every capsule. Save 15% off when you use the code TELOS95. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Telos 95 banner ad. Age better with Telos 95, the cutting-edge technology that's a leap forward in the science of aging, with research that was conducted by world experts on telomere analysis using worldwide patented technology.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating. But you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
If you take curcumin, you need to pay attention. The best curcumin on earth is metacurcumin. Metacurcumin is up to 277 times more bioavailable and absorbs over 6 times faster than standard curcumin supplements. Metacurcumin even outperforms those supposedly high-performance curcumin products. There's only one metacurcumin by Rev Genetics. You could save 20% off metacurcumin by clicking the banner ad at superhumanradio.com and use superhuman curcumin at checkout. If you want to help stop inflammation in its tracks, you need metacurcumin by Rev Genetics today.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest protein bar, now comes the Quest high protein potato chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenadrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenadrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenadrex, the world's world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. Wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
The health and performance benefits of phytonutrients are indisputable, but getting all of your phytonutrients from your diet is difficult. That's why Prime Nutrition introduced PhytoForm. PhytoForm has nearly 11 grams of all the micronized veggies, fruits, fiber, minerals, and antioxidants you need. Alfalfa, organic spirulina, and chlorella, plus acai, pomegranate, goji, bilberry, blueberry, raspberry, cranberry, and papaya. Cabbage, spinach, broccoli, beet, the list goes on and on. You won't find a better, more complete fruits and greens blend anywhere. It even includes PQQ, which has been shown to improve mitochondrial biogenesis. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Prime Nutrition banner ad today and use coupon code SHR to save 30% off. Prime Nutrition, the best or nothing.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
Welcome back to the Subversity Science Roundup. We're changing it up. We were going to talk about the activity trackers next, but I want to talk about another blog post. Now, I don't think these are not released yet. Is that correct, Adele?
No, they're in the pipeline.
Okay, so they will be released shortly. There's a human study that shows that gives new insights into how NSAIDs speed up satellite cell recruitment and muscle repair in youngsters. But this is contrary. What made me think about doing this next was because you said anytime you fool with speeding up the recovery process, you may also affect the adaptation process and other things as well. I always thought that NSAIDs were a bad idea post-workout or to use at all, because they would actually impair the recovery process, but the intended effects of the exercising, which is to increase strength and adaptation. But this study says otherwise, right?
Not really, because they didn't test the adaptational effects. What they did is they took 32 untrained but healthy young men who consumed 1,200 milligrams of ibuprofen for 2 weeks before and 4 weeks after an electrical stimulation-induced injury to the quads. So what they did is they attached electrodes to the quads and induced the maximal contraction that would damage the muscle. And give you DOMS on the next day. So you would feel sore for several days afterwards. And what they wanted to see, in order to be able to maybe figure out why previous studies were or had so heterogeneous results, was what would happen to the satellite cells, which are the quote-unquote muscle precursor cells that are surrounding your existing muscle tissue, and they are recruited and built or integrated into the muscle in order to repair it. And they wanted to see whether the ibuprofen would actually impair or maybe accelerate the process of recruiting and integrating these sleeping muscle cells or muscle cells to be. And what they found was that this process was really, there was a major acceleration of this repair process. And this does not necessarily mean that you will make greater gains, but it certainly means that you will be back to the grind faster, because you will acquire a full muscle recovery and full muscle repair faster. And this is quite interesting, because previous studies in younger individuals where, for example, they tested the effect on actual strength gains or, for example, on muscle gains, were either neutral, so they saw no effects, or they were even negative effects. While this study rather supports the results of previous studies in older individuals, where the scientists found either no effect again or beneficial effects. And this is maybe also, or this difference can maybe be explained by the fact that the normal, so without drug treatment, the normal process of muscle repair is much faster and much more efficient in younger individuals.
Right.
So in older individuals, the way ibuprofen and other NSAIDs actually accelerate this process, may be so beneficial that it eventually also increases the success of their training. While in younger individuals, it's probably only going to increase the recovery and maybe even going to decrease the outcome, because again, the stressor is not perceived as being such severe as it is if you don't use the COX inhibitors.
Okay, so there are lots of natural COX inhibitors out there. Ginger, turmeric, that's standardized for the curcumoids. Fish oil appears to affect inflammation through a different pathway, but nonetheless could be considered an anti-inflammatory nutrient. With that being said, that's assuming it's not rancid fish oil. With that being said, do you think that for older adults it's wiser and for younger adults it's not wise to employ these natural anti-inflammatory nutrients if you're looking for better recovery and better outcome from your training?
In general, I would agree, although I have to admit that especially for those which have indirect mechanisms, unlike, for example, vitamin C, which is a direct radical scavenger, things like, for example, curcumin, have more complex effects on the inflammatory response. And there is really no evidence that would suggest that they have the same negative effects on the training results in young people as, for example, high doses of vitamin C and vitamin E. You are still generally right. Not just older people, but also people who are in a condition, for example, obese people or people with diabetes or other conditions which involve a systemic inflammatory response. All these people may benefit from primarily reducing the chronic inflammation in order to make the targeted inflammation you want to create when you work out stick out of the baseline level of inflammation you have anyway.
That's exactly what I was thinking of. I was thinking, look, as we get older, we appear to start to become more pro-inflammatory. As we age, for whatever reason, it seems that the inflammatory process seems to be heightened and prolonged. And by reducing that, then the little pips that stick up after your workout, they are the ones that get attended to instead of all this other noise, if you will, this inflammatory noise that goes on in the body. That's exactly what I was looking for the answer. That's great. Fantastic.
Right. But I would like to point out that I think that it's not like the inflammation goes up, but rather the natural ability to keep it down is decreasing as you age, or if you have any health conditions that involve chronic inflammation, obviously.
Okay. So, I know you're not a fan of fish oil supplementation. Is that correct?
Not really, no.
Okay. Are you a fan of supplementing with things like curcumin and ginger, and things that have a natural anti-inflammatory benefit?
Well, I think they are not going to hurt you in general, but I personally feel that many of us are taking way too many supplements, so I wouldn't suggest that everyone should take them. Although, as I said, I think that for none of these, there is good evidence that they will impair your training success. There's only recently been published, a new study on fish oil has only recently been published, which showed that it does not have any effect on the actual amount of muscle young trainees gained when they used the fish oil, although the protein synthetic response appeared to be hampered by the use or by the chronic ingestion of fish oil. So eventually, this is probably related to its anti-inflammatory effects, but since the outcome is not different, you can't really argue that it's going to impair your gains. And I would expect very similar results for all the other natural anti-inflammatories people are taking these days.
So would you agree with this statement that because we've discovered chronic inflammation in the population as a problem, that we are now about to go too far to the anti-inflammatory side of the table with our you know, it's our tendency to more is better, and let's get all the, because inflammation has a role in the body. There's no doubt about it. I think that if you are taking too many anti-inflammatory nutrients, it actually can cause memory problems and so on. Heart rate pattern changes. So there's obviously a devastation or a dangerous side to going too far to the anti-inflammatory side as well, right?
Yeah, I would agree. And I think one of the problems here is that people often overinterpret studies that are done in people that are actually very unhealthy and try to extrapolate the results to their lives, even though they are very healthy. So as you just said, it is like keeping the fire going. And if you use too many anti-inflammatory agents, you may actually extinguish the fire you want to keep burning, but at a very controlled rate. So the idea that we are all too inflamed is absolutely not correct. And as I previously pointed out, there is quote-unquote good inflammation in our life, like, for example, the exercise stress. And there's bad inflammation in our life, which is, for example, caused by a very high inflammatory diet. And you want to differentiate those and keep in mind that inflammation per se is not dangerous, but something your body actually needs. No repair process in the body will actually take place if there is no inflammation. If we go back to the peptide we just discussed, it actually works by increasing, not by decreasing, the inflammatory process after an injury, and this speeds up the healing process. So if you take a look at the graphs I'm going to publish over the course of the week, you will see that the inflammatory markers go up initially if you use this peptide, and then decline, and this is what really makes or triggers the healing process.
Interesting. All right, we're going to take our last commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about activity trackers. We're talking with Adel Moussa, the website he's referencing, if you want to read some of these articles as they become published this week, is Subversity, SUPPVERSITY.com. Check it out. We'll be right back with more Subversity Science Roundup.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide. Prime Nutrition is proud to present Max HP, their most scientifically formulated pre-workout supplement to date. Now available in two great tasting flavors, Tropic Fruit and Raspberry. Max HP is the most ultra-premium pre-workout available and is made without any artificial colors, flavors, or dye. Increasing blood flow to heighten anabolic activity, Max HP is designed to meet the heightened metabolic needs of high-performance athletes. Visit PrimeNutrition.com and use coupon code SUPERHUMANRADIO to receive 20% off of your entire order. Go to PrimeNutrition.com today.
For the best in real-world, no-nonsense, result-producing and effective strength training, muscle-building, and physical culture information, read Brooks Cubic's books and courses. Don't delay. Sprint on over to BrooksCubic.com and choose from more than a dozen of the best books and courses on the market. Brooks Cubic's training advice has been building strength, transforming physiques, and changing lives for more than 25 years. If you prefer e-books, look for Brooks Cubic's best-selling courses at Amazon's Kindle bookstore. Show your support for Physical Culture Radio by going to BrooksCubic.com right now.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
From the makers of GLC 2000, now comes Actistatin Pro Athlete. The Actistatin formula gives you all four forms of glucosamine and chondroitin, plus Actistatin's triple patented delivery method to optimize cellular uptake and utilization of glucosamines, chondroitin, ascorbate, and manganese. Regenerate and maintain cartilage. Promote joint mobility and flexibility. Replenish lost collagen. Get 20% off your next order using the coupon code SHR. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the GLC banner ad today. Push the limits. Feel the difference with Actistatin.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You, too, can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system.
No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
The category killer is back, Mass Pro Synthogen, with results literally from workout one. You'll recover like you're a teenager again. If you've been pouring your heart out in the gym with little to nothing to show for it, you owe it to yourself to see the performance-enhancing and cosmetic effects it can make almost immediately. One user said, I wish I could have tried it sooner. I just ordered two more bottles. And another, the overall single best bodybuilding supplement I have personally ever used. Visit Coach Rob Regis or PredatorNutrition.com to learn more today. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back. We got great shows planned this week. Wednesday, Dr. Marty Pasquale will be on at 1 o'clock to talk about L-carnitine. Very, very interesting discussion. And then Thursday, appropriately, right after Physical Culture Radio, we're going to be joined by the First Lady of Physical Culture, Elaine LaLanne, the wife of Jack LaLanne. She just turned 90. She's still active. She's still thriving. And she's going to talk to us about how to do that in our own lives. Right now, we're talking with Adele Musa. We want to talk a little bit about activity trackers. I wear a Fitbit. I've been wearing it so religiously that it's left a dent in my arm from where the little blood pressure or whatever it is, that heartbeat monitor is. I wear mine. I track my sleep. I track my workouts. But I don't take it too seriously as far as the steps go. So apparently these are not that accurate, are they, Adele?
Well, the steps themselves are actually pretty accurate. It depends on what you are doing. For example, obviously you can't really measure when you're cycling, so you're not going to take steps and you have an error of 70%. And when you're doing household work, it also is not very accurate. For example, up to errors of up to 80% were measured in a recent study. maybe I'll briefly tell people in order to understand how they did it. The scientists got to the data. They had participants, younger and older participants, men and women, do a certain set of activities which took them an hour in total. And they measured they counted the steps, so to say, by observing the people, and they also indirectly measured the energy expenditure as you would do it in a scientific study in a very controlled environment. And then they wanted to find out whether the step counts, and the predicted energy expenditure that were shown by the devices were accurate. And in total, they had 8 devices in the study, and what they found was that the prediction or the accuracy of the step count was okay if you considered things you would actually take steps, like taking the stairs or walking around or jogging or things like that. The prediction was very accurate. So they are actually quite good in predicting your quote-unquote free time activity and the steps you are taking for locomotion from one place to another. On the other hand, there are people who may be very active in their own household, and this is something the trackers didn't really recognize that well. That doesn't change their function and their ability to hold yourself or to make yourself accountable, because it's still, even if you are off by an average, I think, of 10%, considering all the activities, you still know roughly how much, if you have been more active or less active than before. And I think, as you pointed out in the introduction, you said that you don't take those too seriously, and you don't, if it's now 10,000 steps or 10,200, that's not a real difference. But if you measure, for example, only 5,000 instead of your usual 10,000, you know reliably that you were less active on a certain day. And this leeway and not taking the data too seriously is even more important if you take a look at the energy expenditure data these devices will deliver. Because depending on the activity, on what you do, those can be significantly off. So, for example, if you use a Fitbit, the the scientists found a 43% inaccuracy when you were cycling. So if you go cycling, for example, you probably totally underestimate your energy expenditure because the device simply doesn't track this very well. And if you are not somebody who is really into tracking his energy intake and his energy expenditure and who relies too much on the data from those devices, you are obviously going to lose or to gain weight right. if these devices provide a maximum, and that's the best accuracy the scientists found, a maximal accuracy of plus minus 10%. And actually, funnily, I've been just talking or rather writing on Facebook with a good friend of ours, Alex, and he said that he can confirm that the data is probably about 7% off for him, the one his activity tracker gives him in terms of the energy expenditure. And you also have to keep in mind that even the more scientific method the scientists used in order to estimate the energy expenditure is not 100% accurate. As unfortunate as this may sound, we are not biological machines where the input and output is as easily calculated. So whenever you rely too much on calorie counting, you are usually going to run into problems. Because, for example, let's say you are starting to exercise 2 hours a day, and you do that for 3 weeks. Then over time, your energy expenditure during the same exercise is probably going to decrease. And by eating the same amount of food on every day, you may not be able to maintain your weight or maintain your weight loss if you're intending to lose weight. And that's something I really want to point out. So even though the devices are effective in telling you how active you were in general, so in semi-quantitative terms, they are not giving you an absolutely accurate measure of how much energy you can have or you expended on a given day.
What about the heart rate monitors? There's a lot of people out there who like to monitor their heart rate because of heart rate variability training and so on. I know the most popular thing is the band that you wear around your chest to track heart rate, but these seem to track pulse. Are they accurate at tracking pulse?
Unfortunately, I can't tell you that. I saw the question on Facebook a minute ago, and I tried to find it out, but they didn't test it in this study, and I couldn't find another study as fast in the 2 minutes or in the break. So I really can't tell you how accurate they are, but you can tell that by, if you have a device, or if, for example, you use your iPhone to track that, you will always have a certain error, because in contrast to the belt you wear around your chest, the contact is not 100% there, and therefore it's probably going to be not 100% accurate. But again, it is not that important to know whether you're working out at 100 beats per minute or 105 beats per minute. So you really have to relativize the accuracy of these devices and rather take them as a rough guide in terms of how much you work out or how active you are. And if you take a look at studies, you see that this is actually really important, especially for people who haven't been or haven't led an active lifestyle for a long time. This is, first of all, rewarding if they actually see what they have managed to do in a single day. And there's very good evidence that it also will increase the success rates of exercise interventions targeted, for example, at improving heart health or at improving lipid levels or glucose management. All of those studies have already been done, and 90% of them using an activity tracker in order to make yourself or to be accountable for what you do and whether you actually met your activity goals helped. And this will help no matter if your values are 10% off
right.
or not.
Right, because just getting people to start focusing on their activity it's in and of itself. And I kind of think that answers John Annunziata's question. He says, do we really need activity trackers when a mirror is never far away? And I guess for those people who are healthy and active and in some sort of fit state where they can actually see the changes in body fat, yeah, maybe you don't need an activity tracker. But for those people out there who are just starting to get the message that being active is important, this kind of turns it into a game. I have a friend and his entire family have Fitbits, even his mother. And they have a competition right now amongst the family. And All of her children work, and she's retired. So she's walking 6 miles a day. It takes her like 5 to 6 hours to do this. And she's getting 24,000 steps in a day, and she's beating all of them. And the kids are striving to try to beat the mom. And it really has made the activity a game. I think that's one of the values of this. It turns activity into a metric, a measurable game that gets people excited about moving again.
Yeah, you're certainly right. Exactly. And you also see people posting their success in the form of screenshots on Facebook or on Instagram and things like that. So this is really something that can motivate people to train. But still, what was his name? The guy who posted on Facebook.
John Annunziata. John Annunziata.
Yeah, you're still right. You still need the mirror, even if you're overweight and you can't really see each gram of fat you lose in the mirror. You have to keep in mind that, as I said before, if you rely too heavily on the data, you can be 10% off, and those 10% can make you gain weight continuously.
Right.
So the scale and the mirror still have a place in controlling your success. But on a daily basis, the data you get from the Fitbit or from other devices is actually something that can really motivate you, that can keep you on track, and that can also give you feedback in terms of whether you are failing or actually overachieving. I mean, some of the listeners may be like me and always exercising too much than too little. And this is also something with which you can control that as well.
Well, and this is actually a discussion I had with Tom Bilyeu and Ron Pena when we were out at the Arnold in Columbus, and we were having breakfast one morning. And I said to somebody like me, my Fitbit can actually become dangerous. Let me qualify that. So if I have a hard training session and I'm moving tons of weight in that leg training session, for instance, it may be unrealistic and unadvisable for me to strive to hit my 15,000 or 10,000 step quota that day. In fact, it may be a bad idea for recovery of my legs and so on. So I think that while these activity trackers and these 10,000 step a day goals may be important metrics for average people who don't have a lot of activity in their life to follow, those of us who tend to live a more superhuman lifestyle, where we are training extremely heavy in the gym and doing morning fasted cardio, those 5,000, 4,000 step days may be important additions to our week, as opposed to always striving to hit our 10,000 step quota. What would you say to that statement, Adele?
I would fully agree. And if you ask athletes how they use those devices, but I guess they are not aiming to get their 10,000 steps every day. So for them, they are probably more important as a heart rate monitor, and maybe even to make sure that they don't move too much outside of their regular training in order not to impair recovery. Although you have to say that walking around is usually going to promote your recovery. But I know that some people will say, well, I haven't had my 10,000 steps today, so let's hop on the treadmill and do my 10,000 steps sprinting. And this is certainly going to hurt your recovery. And you are right that having this Fitbit and maybe having this one number you have to hit every day is also something that can lead into what you could call exercise addiction.
Yes.
Because you always have to meet this goal. You always have to have the 10,000 steps. You always have to burn at least, I don't know, maybe 1,000 calories extra per day. And knowing that this is not even really accurate helps you, does hopefully also help you to have this leeway of having one day where it's only 5,000 steps. And knowing that on the other days you may have had 500 extra steps the activity tracker didn't even check. And this is also important. Changes don't occur on a day-to-day basis. And when people ask me about the deficit, I usually say you have to have a deficit over 1 week. You don't have to have a caloric deficit on each and every day. You're not going to ruin your diet if you have a 10% plus on one day and on the other days 15% less than you consume, right, than you need to consume. These processes are slow. They take their time, and therefore these being too interested in meeting your goal on every day can actually be very counterproductive.
Always great to have you on the show, Adele. I know that you're very busy between your writing and your teaching. So whenever we have these opportunities, I enjoy it. Thank you for being here today. His website is, Subversity, SUPPVERSITY.com. If you've never read any of his writings, you've been living under a rock. Nobody puts out the body of work and the brilliant insights that Adel Moussa does. Thanks, Adel. So talk to you soon, okay?
Yep, bye.
All right. And we're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to change it up a little bit. We're going to talk about hepatic insulin resistance. Is this what leads to diabetes? Stay tuned.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Nobel Prize-winning research shows telomeres are an important part of preventing cellular aging. Slowing down telomere shortenings promotes healthy cell replication and longevity. This is simple, folks. Supplement today with the longevity breakthrough of the century, Telos 95. Telos 95 provides the only scientifically validated telomere support ingredient in every capsule. Save 15% off when you use the code TELOS95. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Telos 95 banner ad. Age better with Telos 95, the cutting-edge technology that's a leap forward in the science of aging, with research that was conducted by world experts on telomere analysis using worldwide patented technology.
Made by Hemp.com sells the highest quality products derived from industrial hemp, raw oils high in CBD, tinctures, and salves. You can also get fashionable apparel made from industrial hemp at madebyhemp.com. CBD is a constituent of industrial hemp that has no psychoactive properties, but has been shown to provide a variety of health benefits. Go to madebyhemp.com today and take a look at all of our amazing products. Use the coupon code SHR to save 25% off your entire order. Madebyhemp.com, your one-stop shop for all things hemp on the web.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high-quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Live On Labs. You too can benefit from Live On Labs lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Live On Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at liveonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's liveonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
The health and performance benefits of phytonutrients are indisputable, but getting all of your phytonutrients from your diet is difficult. That's why Prime Nutrition introduced PhytoForm. PhytoForm has nearly 11 grams of all the micronized veggies, fruits, fiber, minerals, and antioxidants you need. Alfalfa, organic spirulina, and chlorella, plus acai, pomegranate, goji, bilberry, blueberry, raspberry, cranberry, and papaya. Cabbage, spinach, broccoli, beet, the list goes on and on. You won't find a better, more complete fruits and greens blend anywhere. It even includes PQQ, which has been shown to improve mitochondrial biogenesis. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Prime Nutrition banner ad today and use coupon code SHR to save 30% off. Prime Nutrition, the best or nothing.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high-quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.
Welcome back. Now we're going to change the discussion a little bit. We're going to talk about the role of hepatic insulin resistance in obesity. We're being joined by Dr. Miralia Surly from the University of Amsterdam. How you doing, Dr. Surly?
I'm fine. How are you?
Thank you. Very good. Welcome to the show. What questions were you trying to answer in this this study that you and your colleagues just published?
Well, we are actually studying the disturbances in glucose metabolism occurring in the presence of obesity. And one of the hallmarks, actually, of diabetes induced by obesity is the presence of insulin resistance, which actually means that the biological effects of insulin are actually less, that you need more insulin to have the same effects on glucose, for instance. So insulin resistance is a hallmark of obesity, but it actually consists of increased glucose production by the liver, in addition to reduced glucose uptake by mainly muscle and adipose tissue. So we were wondering, in obese subjects with pre-diabetes, so with impaired fasting glucose, so having a higher glucose in the morning before eating, whether that was mainly due to an increase in glucose production by the liver or a reduction of glucose uptake by muscle.
Now, the liver, it produces glucose or it stores glycogen and releases it in an effort to try to keep homeostatic levels of blood sugar.
It's doing both.
Okay. So the liver is almost like a battery, if you will, as well as a metabolizer of glucose, right?
Yeah, it is. So it's storing glucose for times of fasting. When the body, especially the brain, actually heavily depends on glucose coming from the liver, and it's also and it's also producing glucose for that reason. Yeah.
Okay. So how was this study designed, Dr. Surly?
So what we actually did, the last several years we did a lot of different studies actually on glucose metabolism in obese persons, and we study glucose metabolism always in the same way, and we gather like all the data from those different studies and build a cohort in which we had obese people and also healthy subjects, healthy controls, and we actually divided the obese persons in having a normal fasting glucose and impaired fasting glucose. And then actually we compared the differences in the glucose fluxes we measured, so glucose production by the liver and glucose uptake by muscle.
Okay, but the healthy controls, were they considered obese as well, or these were normal weight people?
Well, so in this study, this particular study you're referring to, we did not include the controls. We did the healthy controls, but in a lot of studies, we compare actually glucose metabolism data in obese subjects versus healthy controls to see what's going on and what the differences are. But in this study, we actually compare the obese subjects with normal versus impaired fasting glucose.
Is it safe to say that a person who's obese with normal fasting glucose levels, if you look at the amount of insulin they're producing, that there is a point in time where they will have impaired fasting glucose as well? They're just not there yet.
Yeah, so that's a really relevant question, because right now we're screening people like in clinics on fasting glucose, but we're not measuring insulin. So we know that indeed there is an increased production, but also a reduced clearance of insulin, making insulin levels higher in the blood to keep glucose down. So if you're just measuring glucose, a subject might be insulin resistant without you seeing it, just looking at the glucose level. On the other hand, we know that about 20%, but that's just an estimate, of obese people are actually metabolically healthy. So they have no insulin resistance and they have normal blood lipids and so on. And we don't know whether that subset of obese subjects in the end will all develop insulin resistance and and part of them also diabetes, or whether they will remain relatively healthy during the course of their life.
Shouldn't we track it? You know, see, this is, okay, for there was a study published middle of last year that made it into the mainstream media here in the United States about it, and it said basically obese people can be healthy too. And this is the group that they talked about. They talked about obese individuals who have metabolically healthy markers. And
yeah.
And my complaint about that is, and keep in mind that I used to be 330 pounds and I had insulin resistance and dyslipidemia and all those things, and I take no drugs now. But
yeah.
You know.
Good.
But my frustration with that is, you take a snapshot of a person. And especially when we're not looking at insulin, and some of these studies don't look at insulin, and I have two frustrations. Number one, looking at blood sugar by itself and trying to assess the metabolic condition of a person's body without looking at insulin is like trying to assess how fast your car is going by measuring the distance between the gas pedal and the floorboard. It's irrelevant, because if you're going up a hill or going down a hill, the same depression of your gas pedal will produce two different speeds completely. And so the idea that all we look at is blood sugar today, it's really a travesty of modern medicine. We need to be looking at insulin too. How much insulin is this person producing in order to achieve that level of blood sugar? Number one. Number two, looking at a person at a point in time and going, they are obese, but they have all these markers are within these ranges. We need to follow those people over the next 15 years, because I'm willing to bet a large amount of money that if you give them some time, their body will start to show the ravages of living with that type of physical conditioning, that they will start to become full-blown diabetics. It's just a matter of time. And I think those kind of messages like, oh, see, you can be obese and be healthy too, that's not true. It's just not true. You're looking at a period in time where the person's body has not collapsed under the weight of their lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, coming back to your first frustration about the glucose, I think you are right, but on the other hand, if you're measuring glucose and it is above a certain level, then you know that that particular subject will, or man or woman or child will actually is a pre-diabetic and will probably develop diabetes in a couple of years or maybe earlier. So it's not like it's useless. The only problem with it is that if it's normal, you cannot tell just from a normal fasting value that that person is not insulin resistant. So you're right. And actually, we did another study in which we defined the threshold for insulin resistance.
Mm.
And there we compared the healthy controls with people with insulin resistance and obesity. And we actually saw that there was a very strong correlation indeed with fasting insulin and insulin resistance, measured with specific techniques, while glucose concentration, fasting glucose, did not correlate with insulin resistance.
Bingo.
So you are right.
Yeah.
But if it is higher, then you know at least that this person is at risk. So your second question about metabolically healthy people, well, we don't know that. We don't have long-term follow-up studies showing actually that these people will stay healthy or not. It's also, some people have a lot of body weight and even a lot of body fat, but are exercising regularly, and they are able to maintain a healthy metabolism. So it's not all just about body weight, and it's not a one-on-one correlation. Like, every obese person will develop diabetes. That's not the case.
Okay. So let's get back to your discussion here. Well, actually, let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break. And
okay.
When we come back, let's pick it up and let's talk about how the study was designed and what you learned. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We'll be right back.
Proud to present Max HP,
their most scientifically formulated pre-workout supplement to date, now available in two great tasting flavors, Tropic Fruit and Raspberry. Max HP is the most ultra-premium pre-workout available and is made without any artificial colors, flavors, or dyes. Increasing blood flow to heighten anabolic activity, Max HP is designed to meet the heightened metabolic needs of high-performance athletes. Visit PrimeNutrition.com and use coupon code SUPERHUMANRADIO to receive 20% off of your entire order. Go to PrimeNutrition.com today.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Nobel Prize-winning research shows telomeres are an important part of preventing cellular aging. Slowing down telomere shortenings promotes healthy cell replication and longevity. This is simple, folks. Supplement today with the longevity breakthrough of the century, Telos 95. Telos 95 provides the only scientifically validated telomere support ingredient in every capsule. Save 15% off when you use the code TELOS95. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Telos 95 banner ad. Age better with Telos 95, the cutting-edge technology that's a leap forward in the science of aging, with research that was conducted by world experts on telomere analysis using worldwide patented technology.
Too much on your mind to fall asleep?
Oh, no.
It happens to all of us every now and then. Instead of counting sheep, count Sleep Factors, a naturopathic formulated blend that supports falling asleep naturally. No medicated numbing, no harsh interruptions of your body's natural flow. Sleep Factors work in harmony with your body and its natural rhythms, so sleep just happens naturally. Sleep Factors by Michael's Naturopathic Programs. You can find Sleep Factors and Michael's entire line of body-loving naturopathic formulations at your local health food store or online at michaelshealth.com. Practitioner formulated. Practitioner approved.
From the makers of GLC 2000, now comes Actistatin Pro Athlete. The Actistatin formula gives you all four forms of glucosamine and chondroitin, plus Actistatin's triple patented delivery method to optimize cellular uptake and utilization of glucosamines, chondroitin, ascorbate, and manganese. Regenerate and maintain cartilage. Promote joint mobility and flexibility. Replenish lost collagen. Get 20% off your next order using the coupon code SHR. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the GLC banner ad today. Push the limits. Feel the difference with Actistatin.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finest supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at LivonLabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's liveonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking about the effects of the liver, and insulin resistance and obesity. And I apologize for mispronouncing your first name, but I'm going to take a chance at it. Dr. Medelli? No, I can't pronounce it. Isn't it terrible?
I'm just
going to call you Dr. Shirley, okay? This way I don't look like a fool and don't insult you. So how was this study was designed with 131 obese people, as you point out. So when you looked at the normal fasting glucose obese individuals versus the impaired fasting glucose obese individuals, what markers did you specifically look at besides just blood sugar? You looked at insulin, right?
Yeah, so what we measured were glucoregulatory hormones, so cortisol, insulin, and glucagon, which all have independent influences on glucose, glucose production and glucose uptake. So we checked those hormones. And we also, more importantly, I think, measure the real fluxes. So what we do is we infuse a glucose tracer. And by infusing that and using like what we call a stable isotope dilution technique, we can actually measure the amount of glucose produced endogenously, mainly by the liver, a little bit by the kidney, but mainly by the liver. And we also can assess the rate of glucose uptake, mainly in muscle, but also a little bit in adipose tissue.
Okay, and now you injected the whole discussion, the word cortisol into this, as well as glucagon, but cortisol more specifically. You know, I can't help wonder what affects lifestyle, and more specifically, overconsumption of caffeinated drinks like we have here in the United States, the role that they play on cortisol dysregulation, but more importantly, people who stay up late at night, they expose themselves to blue light late at night, they eat food late at night. People don't think about cortisol when they think about insulin resistance, but cortisol, glucagon, and insulin, they play a very, very gentle game of tug of war, in order to keep blood sugar levels within a very, very tight, zone. And when these hormones stop working properly, then this is when we have hyper and hypoglycemic episodes and blood sugar looks more like a waveform. We don't think about cortisol when we talk about, obesity we may, but when we talk about insulin resistance at all, do we?
No, that's, there are several groups working on the role of specifically cortisol levels within tissue, predominantly in adipose tissue, and how that affects insulin sensitivity.
Uh-huh.
And it has been shown that in local tissues involved in insulin sensitivity, cortisol levels are actually higher, especially in adipose tissue. So there might be higher local production of cortisol. The other thing you mentioned about the light exposure is actually interesting. It's also stuff we're working on. And you're right that exposure to specifically bright light during the day, but also at night, actually increases cortisol release. So one of the reasons why we think why people might become insulin resistant when they are exposed to light at night or when they're eating at night, late at night, part of the story is probably enhanced cortisol production.
Well, and I'll go a step further. So I don't know how it is in Amsterdam, but here in the United States, we have young children developing obstructive sleep apnea. And I have my theories on where this is coming from, gut issues that cause edema and narrowing of the breathing pathways, including all the way up to the roof of the mouth. But that's a different discussion. So I have been on a soapbox for at least the past 6 or 7 years saying, look, even if you don't have frank obstructive sleep apnea, if you snore heavy at night, this is causing metabolic changes in your body. Your body does not like to struggle for air. If it struggles for air, even moderately, it heightens awareness of the body and cortisol levels go up at night. We know from people who suffer from frank obstructive sleep apnea, especially those who are pre-treated for it, they're just being observed. We know that these people have highly dysregulated cortisol levels. They have very, very, very low cortisol levels first thing in the morning when they should be the highest. These people suffer from extreme hypoglycemic episodes first thing in the morning before the hyperglycemia kicks in because the body struggles and goes, oh, we've got to get blood sugar up. And they have this rebound. So it's not just the light, but it's also sleep hygiene that is challenging and also creating its own form of insulin resistance, I think, because of the cortisol dysregulation.
Yeah, I did not study that. I'm not aware of the cortisol dynamics in sleep apnea, but we all know that sleep disturbances and can lead to disturbances in metabolism, yeah. And whether that's all through cortisol or whether different pathways are involved, I'm not sure.
Okay, so getting back to your study, so when you looked at the people with the normal fasting glucose glucose versus the impaired fasting glucose, what did you notice about glucagon more specifically? That's what I'm curious about.
Well, that's a good question because we actually thought that people with having higher fasting glucose would have higher glucose production in the fasting state, which they didn't have. So we also assumed that glucagon levels, because glucagon stimulates glucose production in the fasting state,
right,
that would be higher. But we did not see any differences in glucagon between the group with normal versus the impaired fasting glucose levels.
And their cortisol levels, they were?
The cortisol levels were also comparable, but you have to bear in mind that those are not measurements as dynamic as the measurements in glucose metabolism we did. So I don't know how glucose curves, or sorry, cortisol curves during the day would look like between those two groups. So in the fasting state and during the measurements, they were the same.
Okay. So what were the real differences between these two groups?
Well, the major difference actually, and those people, it's not like they were all, that they had normal insulin sensitivity, but they did not differ, so they were insulin resistant if you would compare them to a healthy control, group. But within the insulin resistance, within the two groups, or between, I have to say, the major difference was actually hepatic insulin sensitivity, meaning the ability of insulin to suppress glucose production was lower in the group with the impaired fasting glucose.
So the ability of insulin to suppress glucose production from the liver was lower.
Yeah.
So that means that the liver was going to overproduce glucose, you're saying?
Yeah, because normally, so insulin levels are up when we're eating, so there's no need to produce glucose when glucose is coming from the gut, right? So so in states of hyperinsulinemia, and in our case when we infuse insulin, glucose production should be low.
Right.
And that's what we call insulin sensitivity of the liver, or hepatic insulin sensitivity, and that was lower, so there was more glucose production ongoing while there were high insulin levels in the impaired fasting glucose group.
Now, I've got to take a break, but I've got a question about this. About does the liver eventually run out of the ability or to release glycogen and contribute to glucose production, which would lead to hypoglycemia in times where someone is not eating? That's the question I'm going to come back and ask you. Okay.
All right. Okay. All right.
All right. So sit tight. We'll be right back.
Products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all. Anabolicminds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit Anabolicminds.com today and get into the action. Anabolicminds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains.
Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
MadeByHemp.com sells the highest quality products derived from industrial hemp, raw oils high in CBD, tinctures, and salves. You can also get fashionable apparel made from industrial hemp at MadeByHemp.com. CBD is a constituent of industrial hemp that has no psychoactive properties, but has been shown to provide a variety of health benefits. Go to MadeByHemp.com today and take a look at all of our amazing products. Use the coupon code SHR to save 25% off your entire order. MadeByHemp.com, your one-stop shop for all things hemp on the web.
If you take curcumin, you need to pay attention. The best curcumin on earth is metacurcumin. Metacurcumin is up to 277 times more bioavailable and absorbs over 6 times faster than standard curcumin supplements. Metacurcumin even outperforms those supposedly high-performance curcumin products. There's only one metacurcumin by Rev Genetics. You could save 20% off metacurcumin by clicking the banner ad at superhumanradio.com and use superhuman curcumin at checkout. If you want to help stop inflammation in its tracks, you need Metacurcumin by Rev Genetics today.
This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch.
Welcome back. We're talking to Dr. Mirelle Serli. Was that close?
Yeah, that's close.
Okay. We're talking about impaired insulin action in the liver. So when the liver undergoes this phenomenon for long periods of time where it keeps on pumping out glucose because of the impaired insulin resistance. And since we talked about earlier in the show that the liver really is kind of a battery, but it also has the ability to produce glucose on demand if necessary from amino acids through gluconeogenesis. When you tax the liver and you have it constantly doing what it should only be doing in backup, as a support mechanism, it's constantly putting out glucose. Does it start to become exhausted and then when we need it to do what it's supposed to do, it doesn't do it, so we have these hypoglycemic episodes in between meals in diabetics?
Well, actually, I don't think that's the case. So the liver can produce glucose from glycogen and also, indeed, from amino acids and lactate and glycerol. So we know that in healthy volunteers, a lot of glucose is coming from glycogen breakdown, but after 42 hours, glycogen stores are almost close to zero, and glucose production overall is lower, and most is coming from gluconeogenesis. But actually, people fasting almost never develop true hypoglycemia. So this process of gluconeogenesis can almost go on forever. I mean, if you're not eating, of course, eventually you will die. But I don't think the liver will get exhausted.
Okay.
It will take up enough glucose after a meal to store glycogen, and it will always be able to produce glucose from those precursors.
So your research kind of indicates that perhaps the first domino, if you will, to whole body insulin resistance may be that the liver becomes insulin resistant first. Is that correct?
Well, that, we don't know that. I mean, there are different schools. Some people think it all starts with insulin resistance in muscle, and other schools show that it might be the liver first. In humans, when we, because we do cross-sectional studies, so we should do way more follow-up studies to actually study this question you asked. But so the subjects we studied, they, most of them were whole body insulin resistant, so they were resistant in muscle. But our question really was, when they progress from normal fasting glucose to this pre-diabetic state with impaired fasting glucose, what contributes to this transition? Is that more muscle, or is that the liver? And at least in this cohort of people, the major distinction between these two groups was actually an impaired insulin action in the liver. So that was a distinct feature between these two groups. While they were both resistant in muscle already, so you might actually say that as long as insulin action in liver is okay, they are able to maintain fasting glucose. You might say that. But they were resistant in muscle as well.
Are we, there's an odd ticking going on the line. I don't know what it came from. Hold on a second.
Yeah, here too.
Yeah, it's coming over the phone line. Okay, we'll deal with it for a second here, and we may have to take, you know what? We may have to take off, let's take our break now, and I'm going to hang up and call you right back, okay?
Yeah, or call me on my cell.
Okay, very good. We'll call you right back. All right, sit tight. We'll be right back.
Best in real-world, no-nonsense, result-producing, and effective strength training, muscle-building, and physical culture information, read Brooks Cubic's books and courses. Don't delay. Sprint on over to brookscubic.com and choose from more than a dozen of the best books and courses on the market. Brooks Cubic's training advice has been building strength, transforming physiques, and changing lives for more than 25 years. If you prefer e-books, look for Brooks Cubic's best-selling courses at Amazon's Kindle bookstore. Show your support for Physical Culture Radio by going to BrooksCubic.com right now. Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenadrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenadrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenadrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
The category killer is back. Mass Pro Synthogen, with results literally from workout one. You'll recover like you're a teenager again. If you've been pouring your heart out in the gym with little to nothing to show for it, you owe it to yourself to see the performance-enhancing and cosmetic effects it can make almost immediately. One user said, "I wish I could have tried it sooner. I just ordered 2 more bottles. And another, "The overall single best bodybuilding supplement I have personally ever used." Visit CoachRobRegish.com or Predator Nutrition. To learn more today. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
Prime Nutrition is proud to present Max HP, their most scientifically formulated pre-workout supplement to date. Now available in 2 great tasting flavors, Tropic Fruit and Raspberry. Max HP is the most ultra-premium pre-workout available and is made without any artificial colors, flavors, or dye. Increasing blood flow to heighten anabolic activity, Max HP is designed to meet the heightened metabolic needs of high performance athletes.
Visit PrimeNutrition.com and use coupon code SUPERHUMANRADIO to receive 20% off of your entire order. Go to PrimeNutrition.com today.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.
Yeah. Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. So we got interrupted by the telephone line, but we're back. Can you hear me okay, Dr. Searle?
I can.
Excellent. Okay, so here's my question to you. Is this minutia that we're arguing over, you know, whether the liver or the muscles become insulin resistant first? Shouldn't we be discussing with these people that they are actually carbohydrate intolerant people? The way we have people who are lactose intolerant, if they drink dairy, they get terrible stomach pains and cramps, diarrhea, and they know, oh, I can't drink dairy. When someone eats starchy carbohydrates and sugars and so on, their blood sugar goes through the roof. When you look at their glucose tolerance tests, they have this long drawn out curve. Shouldn't we be saying to them, you are carbohydrate intolerant. You must stop eating breads, pasta, rice. You stop eating sugars. You eat vegetables and good animal proteins and you'll be healthy. Why aren't we having this discussion instead of, does the liver become insulin resistant first and the muscles become insulin resistant second?
Well, I mean, of course you are right. If people wouldn't eat so much, then there would be no studies on obesity and how that affects glucose metabolism. But the reality is that food intake is increased, including carbohydrates, and tackling increased food intake is extremely difficult. So you're right. If we could just say to obese people and patients that stop eating so much high fat and high sucrose food, but it will all be all right with you, but they will also lose weight, and then their glucose metabolism will be healthier anyway. But the reality is that that isn't the case. That's not that's almost not achievable right now. So then we have to learn to understand what is happening with glucose metabolism to better develop maybe medication that interferes with insulin resistance or preventive measures that specifically target the liver or specifically target muscle. So I think we need that knowledge, knowing that tackling obesity itself and food intake especially is extremely difficult.
See, I was sitting in the sauna. I have some of my best thoughts when I'm in the sauna. I don't know, something about the heat opens up my brain. So I was thinking to myself, you know, why don't doctors have the discussion? When a patient comes into the office and the doctor says, you know, you've been pre-diabetic for the past 8 months. Now your blood sugar is 140. You're fed. We have to put you on meds. Why isn't the discussion that the meds... Here's what we're going to do. We're going to put you on these meds for 6 months. And in that 6 months, I'm going to prescribe that you go see a person who's going to exercise with you and a person that's going to be do your dietary intake template. We're going to change the way you eat. So you're going to be on these meds for 6 months. 6 months from now, you're going to be off these meds because you're going to be losing weight. My problem with this whole scenario is it's very opportunistic. Look, I used to be obese. And today, I'm lean and I'm strong and I'm healthy. It was a decision I made.
How did you do it?
Because my doctor told me you're going to die. That's it. He didn't tell me. Mm-hmm. He gave me all these prescriptions. He says, you know, you're 39 years old. He goes, your heart's not working right. He goes, you really need to get your affairs in order. And mm-hmm. that was it for me. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to die. See, this is the problem, in my humble opinion. The problem, in my humble opinion, is we keep telling people, it's not your fault, it's the thrifty gene. So now we have people who are going to edit the thrifty gene. I had a brilliant scientist on the other day who worked for the National Institutes of Health, Dr. Yeah. Artemis Simopoulos, who said high omega-6 intake does the same yeah. thing to the brain. And she said, we don't have to edit the gene out. We just have to get the omega-6s out of the diet, and people will stop eating so much. It's that simple. But my point is, when the doctor sits down with the patient and says, okay, we're going to prescribe metformin, mm-hmm. and the patient goes, how much is it? Oh, with your it's $5 co-deductible. Oh, that's great. But they never say for 6 months or 8 months, because here's the plan of action. We want to cure you. We don't want you to be on these drugs forever. No one ever says that anymore. And my frustration is, here in the United yeah. States, every commercial is about a pharmaceutical drug. Everyone. It's mm-hmm. sickening yeah. to me. And these people can reverse their illnesses maybe in a year, maybe longer, but they can reverse them instead of just treating the symptoms for the next 30 years. And no one has that discussion with them. Instead, they're going, oh, it's not your fault, it's the thrifty gene.
Well, that's not at least how I talk to my patients, but I'll explain them what the long-term consequences are and that they have a choice. But the choice is, we're also studying the brain and how the brain is affected actually by obesity, not only by obesity, but by specific nutrients.
Right.
So, and we know that it is changed. And we also know that all the pathways involved in eating food and wanting food are extremely complex. And I'm convinced that once a person is really obese, part of the problem of reducing body weight and reducing food intake is because the brain has changed, and it's really tough to reverse that, if that's reversible at all. We don't know that. So I think it's not a matter of a doctor telling you, hey, you have to lose weight or other you die. For some people it works, but for other people they have either other problems or have a brain that is in this eating mode all the time, and which overrule normal physiological feeding behavior, that for them, it's unconsciously, it's very, very difficult to lose weight and reduce food intake. So it's not that black and white or simple, a doctor telling you, oh, you're going to die. It's the same with smoking. People smoke less, that's true, but it's not, if you're having a patient with severe pulmonary disease, you tell him you have to stop smoking because otherwise you'll die. It's not like 100% of patients will stop smoking, right?
No, I know. In fact, I did a show probably the second year I was on the air, so like 9 years ago, where a scientist, a researcher from the UK came on, and it was in the Journal of Psychology, I believe it was published, and they looked at how many life-threatening events must occur as the result of a high-risk behavior before the person abandons the behavior. And
yeah.
It was three. So in other words, a person has a heart attack because they have a poor lifestyle. They say, oh God, please, if you let me live, I'll change my life. I'll lose weight. I'll stop smoking. I'll exercise every day. And then they live and they do that for a little while, and then they go right back to the high-risk behavior that got them there. Then they have another heart attack. They're, oh, God, please, if you just let me live, I'll do
yeah.
It takes three of those before the person actually abandons the high-risk behavior. But she said most people die after the first or second one, so they never get to the third one. So,
yeah.
we need to be I feel like addressing the obesity epidemic without talking about some of the things that are not politically correct, and that's part of the problem today, because you can't really talk about obesity without offending some group of people, so you can't talk about it. And so you have to just say, okay, mm-hmm. we'll just take these pills for the rest of your life, and that's it. Without yeah. really addressing what's going on here, as you point out, the brain changes that occur. We would not do this. We don't do this with heroin addicts. We don't say to heroin addicts, oh, you know, we don't, you know, this is a mental addiction. No, we tell them that you're addicted to this drug. We have to put you into a rehab situation. We have to get you clean. Why don't we do that with people who are obese? Why don't we treat them like heroin addicts? They're addicted to food.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, that is a good question. You're not going to, I mean, we have so many people with overweight and obesity worldwide that you, that it would be impossible to do a kind of obese, open obese rehab centers. But, I mean, I think it, so people really need first to understand what's going on in their body, and second, they really need help. And I don't mean like an intervention of 3 months, because we see in all those studies it works. When people exercise and eat less, of course they lose weight and their glucose is going down. That's very logical. But the long-term outcome is that most people regain weight. I mean, even after bariatric surgery, which is very successful, in the long term, even, I think it's about, it's an estimate, but I think it's about 20% of people after bariatric surgery, they regain weight.
I know.
So people need like almost lifelong coaching in a way. And that's all, I mean, money-wise, that's very expensive.
Well, so but people they should pay for it themselves. I mean, people should look, people need to pay for their own choices in life. The public shouldn't have to.
But do you let I mean, you, and your healthcare system is different, but would you a patient with lung cancer due to smoking, would you let him pay his chemotherapy himself or herself?
That's a tough question. You're right. If they're in the end stages, of course not. I mean, because they're not capable of paying. But if the person is obese and we help them get thin and healthy and on the right track, and then we say to them, "You now it's in your ball, your court to take it the rest of the way. Don't come back if you put all the weight back on." You know, you said about bariatric surgery. Bariatric surgery only works if people change their behavior. So why not just teach
them? The good thing with bariatric surgery actually is that, and we don't quite understand it yet, is that people also eat more healthy. So it's very reinforcing, of course, to lose weight for them. But they also have a change in eating habits, and that's probably something that changes because we change the gut anatomically, and the gut talks to the brain, of course, and all that. But so they themselves have healthier eating habits, even without, I think, people telling them to.
Right, right. So let's talk about your study lastly before we end this interview. So what would you hope that clinicians and lay people take away from your research?
Well, I think the major impact that this might have actually is that, as you already pointed out, that just measuring glucose doesn't tell the whole story. Someone might be insulin resistant and at risk while still having normal glucose with high insulin levels. Second is that we actually should have a closer look into the liver, which is difficult in humans but not impossible, to understand what is changing in the liver that induces this progression from normal glucose to impaired fasting glucose.
Okay. Very, very good. I like your research, by the way. I'm not trying to give you a hard time, but I'm very frustrated about the way, you know, the way here in the United States, we have our hands tied, and quite frankly, there's a lot of us who make different choices with our life, and the worst person about cigarette smoking is an ex-smoker. You know, they say that, right? So once somebody, they become intolerant of everybody else who smokes. And I guess I'm an ex-fat person. And so now all of a sudden I become intolerant of people who are obese. But I'm not really intolerant. I'm joking. But I do think that we have to have honest appraisals of the situation with people. And these discussions have to happen with their doctors. And I even did a show a couple years ago where they looked at a research paper that are doctors talking to their patients about diet, exercise, and managing their obesity when these patients are clearly obese, and less than 10% of doctors are actually addressing it. And I said to the researcher, I have a theory why they're not addressing it. And she said, why? I said, because most of the doctors may be obese. How are you going to have a discussion with your patient and say, you need to do something about your obesity, and they're going to look at you and go, yeah, when you do something about yours, so they don't have the discussion.
Yeah, and also it's more socially acceptable being obese because so many people are obese, so it becomes kind of normal. So the other thing that is very important is prevention, and I think especially our kids, we should actually raise them in a healthy eating environment, and I don't think that is happening, and there are a lot of things that contribute to unhealthy eating in kids, but I think that generation of children right now that are becoming overweight and obese are really a big concern.
Yes, and you know what? I'm a big proponent of epigenetics. I say, look, you don't just get your genetics from your mom and dad. You also get your lifestyle, the foods you like, the way you eat, your associate, how you think about food, how you think about exercise. You get that too, and that may be more important than the genetics you get from them in the long run.
Yeah, might be, yeah.
Great discussion. Thank you for being on the show, Dr. Serley.
Okay, you're welcome.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, so there you have it. But obviously, the discussion about obesity needs to continue. I know I'm a jerk when it comes to that sort of stuff. But you know what? I just feel like we keep telling people it's okay to be obese. It's not your fault. Your brain has changed. You've got the thrifty gene. It's this, it's that, it's that, it's this. And that's the way it is with everything in life. You know, everything in life, you got to fight for what you want. I mean, if your health and your life is important to you, and if you can't do it for yourself, she made a great point. If you have children and you're obese, you are promoting a model that will shorten their lives. When you think of that as a parent, find the strength to cope with your obesity and deal with it once and for all, if not for yourself, for your children, so that they see that you turned it around and they don't have that curse for the rest of their lives. That's it. Okay, we have lots of great shows the rest of the week. Hope you can tune in live. If you can't, always tune into the podcast. We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening today. Never be